Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz and Bathrob Spears Broadsides. And, whoa, a phone call. Let's hope this an on-air phone call. You are, of course, dealing now with the April 8th edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides.
Hi, Free Radio here.
First caller today.
Well, what a surprise. How are you doing there?
Merlin, you know. How you doing, Robert?
I'm good, Merlin. What's new?
Oh, not too much. Changing roommates.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, hey, tell Vinny I love him. There's a little dialogue going back there. He talks about you so much, you think you want to marry me.
Well, now, let's get down to the subject of the show here, Merlin. What do you got to tell us that might have to do with a rent rage rally today down in the beach flats?
Yeah, I got a flyer right here. You want me to read it to you?
Go ahead.
Yeah, hold on, let me get it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk, Robert, talk.
So, we're waiting for one of our... frequent
yeah,
callers.
DJ in exile.
Yeah, so what's cooking? What you got for us?
Yeah, it's a high rent. It's a question. We need rent control and a rent rollback. Tickets for sleeping? Yeah, they suck. We need to legalize sleep for the homeless. City government, that doesn't listen. Oh, not in Santa Cruz, huh, Robert?
Oh, well.
They always listen to us, huh?
Not much, actually.
Well, they just don't call us back, you know?
They listen long enough to call the sergeant at arms.
Because yeah. We need to take to the streets in the largest numbers possible.
And who's signing this flyer?
It's our town. Steve Argue made this.
My goodness, Steve Argue? Isn't he that radical character who ran for city council after being jailed for 7 months? I think it was just the one. In fact, he even was known to have frequented your premises, as I understand it.
Steve's okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's Sunday. Oh, that's today, huh?
You got it, man.
No, April 29th.
Oh, well, so you're talking about another rally. Yeah,
yeah,
Steve is
April
actually
29th
doing a...
at 2 p.m.
He's doing a rally at the town clock in about 4 weeks, or
yeah.
3 weeks, actually. But there is a rally today for those who are listening from 1 to 5, or actually, you come and make signs from 1 to 2 and from 2 to 5, at the Beach Flats Park down at Lee Brandt and Raymond Streets. And it's a rally against rent, or a rage against rent, or a scanned stage-managed event against rent. It's not quite clear which it is. I'm hopeful that renters will show up in great numbers to persuade even the scanned spin masters that, in fact, you know, it's important to proceed with real rent control, not just sort of hope that the city council in a few years down the road might maybe someday do something. You know, we need to actually realize that people are being evicted today, yesterday,
well, you know, my
and the
personal
day before
opinion,
that.
Robert, in my personal opinion, it's because of the dot-comers over there in San Jose that are buying homes here and the regents at UCSC that say, well, we want 10,000 more new students. You know, not the students. I'm not blaming the students.
I would hope
the goddamn
not.
Goddamn university mm-hmm. is to blame, in my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And the dot-comers that are, I don't know, apparently
well, I think this,
they're going out of business left and right.
You know, I think the university could really be an effective target.
I think everybody ought to, if you don't want to sleep, man, they ought to sleep two places.
I mean, you have a situation where the regents are expanding the student body every year, and they've got some, they want more water, they want more housing, they want, you know, more services for their students, and the students for the regents are just simply more, you know, items for making money and more sort of units
to
process.
You know, but the regents say they try to get along and they want to help out Santa Cruz and all that stuff, and you know what? When they do shit...
I don't think they do.
I've read about it in the newspapers, Robert.
Uh-huh.
When they do shit, it's blatant, like, kiss my ass, Santa Cruz, we're doing this.
Some campuses, Merlin, like up in Berkeley, they're actually having sleepouts around the university in order to protest different university policies that impact housing and the community. I don't see why we couldn't do something here. I kind of link that with the sleeping ban and this incredible profiteering around rents. I mean, it's all linked together. And I think that we could link all these issues and actually get some strong action on campus and off campus folks joining the on-campus folks. If people think that this is something that they're interested in, give a call here to our free radio line, 427-3772. Anything more you want to say, Merle?
Yeah, you know, we're talking about the university and all that, and I'm blaming mm-hmm. them, right? But you know who are some of the victims of this rent shit? The students.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, they're also the means by which this all gets done. And students, I know, a lot of them are idealistic and feel that there should be, some sort of basic accommodation with poor people in town so that the students are not displacing poor people, which is...
Yeah,
or
I mean,
even middle-income people.
Yeah, every time I talk to students, they're real polite, they're real nice people, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, Merlin, for the call-in. Anything you want to add?
Just hugs and kisses for V-Man.
Hey, the V-Man is gone, but I'm sure that you and he can
sure
get together
listening.
Later, but not on my show. Talk to you later.
Not on your show.
And that was the magical Merlin giving us the crack of dawn call, I should say the beginning of the show call. You are, in fact, tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, as you probably know, 427-3772. 427-3772 is our call-in line, and our call-in line is open. And we got lots of bits and pieces heading at you today on this two-and-a-half-hour edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the Sunday show. We're going to be, of course, talking about rent control, the sleeping ban, civil rights abuses on the street, our usual topics. Today, of course, particularly pertinent because people can actually, you know, wag their fannies and head down for Beach Park, Beach Flats Park, 1 to 1 o'clock, or I'll be down there probably around 2.
Hi, you're on free radio.
This is my second and last phone
yeah.
call. I want to hear Ball Confusion, Robert.
You already did. I played it last time,
oh,
Big Boy.
No, I wasn't listening.
Well, then you're going to have to hear it on your own time. Talk to you later, Big Boy.
All right.
No objections to Ball of Confusion. I feel like that's what we are around here. But there's other stuff I want to do. And frankly, I usually give short shrift to music. And I sometimes criticize for that. Who wants to hear me talking for 2 hours? Me, of course. But I really like to get information out. And I suppose music can contain information. But, and it's a nice way to break things up. So, in fact, we are going to have a little bit of music here and there. No question about it. In fact, we're going to be continuing with On the Edge, an album by Ewan McCall, Charles Parker, and Peggy Seeger from the 60s, which has a lot of youth stuff, a series of radio ballads released in England. I believe it was released in England. And really good stuff. We have another phone call here.
Hello?
I'll try not to be too long-winded so that Merlin gets upset.
No, that's all right. We all have an opportunity to speak our minds. This sounds like the grand old man of rent control, Bob LaMonica, to me.
Well, this is Bob LaMonica, mm-hmm. and it is interesting to see the phrase rent control taken in an other than negative light in the Sentinel, and by scan, by the way. In fact, to quote Sandy Brown, we should really be looking at who is moving in and who is moving out. The current trend is gentrification, blah, blah, blah. Rent control, higher wages, and permanent affordable housing would help stop the exodus of low and middle-income residents, she said. And on the front cover, they're making a sign for rent control.
You're looking at the Sunday Sentinel.
Right.
So am I. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting. It's an interesting sign.
Well, I myself, of course, have been burned by these scansters so often, as have you, that I'm always a little skeptical about what they're putting themselves in front of, what parade they suddenly are usurping. But still, I think anybody who raises the issue of rent control, the louder the voice, the better, provided you don't let the bureaucrats who've been blocking rent control suddenly take control of the process. And SCAN, of course, has elected the current city council. And the current city council, when it was confronted with your advisory rent stabilization initiative last year, to a person, refused to present that at the city council so that they, you know, it could be allowed on the ballot for voters to talk about. It wasn't even a mandatory initiative. You want to tell us a little bit about that initiative,
Bob? Well, let me say this, too, is that SCAN was certainly asked to participate. And what it was said to me, and it's their right, their bylaws. I'm not a SCAN member, never have been. But I felt that SCAN should have got behind rent control in 1999. The understanding that I had was that they were it was decided that it was not the way to go, and that's pretty much a direct quote from an insider source. And they went, they put their energy into land trusts. Not that land trusts are bad, but rent control covers the majority of people that don't own property in a given jurisdiction. Rent control certainly should have happened by now, and it certainly should be on the front burner by now. I think what is ironic about SCAN and rent control is that SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, was born out of the rent control movement in Santa Cruz in the late 70s. Highly ironic, and this might be an indication of them coming back to their roots. I would applaud and support the Santa Cruz Action Network's efforts in this regard. Joining that kind of an organization is not my style. I tend to view it like a political party. SCAN is a political party for all practical purposes, and it tends to deflect away from the individual's natural propensity towards deciding where they're going to lean on an issue-by-issue basis. So it gets down to power and bandwagoning and stuff like that.
You know, I remember you, Bob, I remember that you spoke about this issue. You speak about it regularly because I know you have been pursuing this methodically over in San Jose with such groups as that, spurred on by San Jose Mercury News columnist, what's his name?
Joe Rodriguez.
Joe Rodriguez.
You know, all this is noble effort stuff. In fact, I've spoken recently at the SEIU here in Santa Cruz twice.
That's the union of the service workers?
The last time was maybe 2 weeks ago. Over the hill in San Jose, SEIU 715 in San Jose got behind the tenants' rights movement immediately, and they added a great deal of credibility to the effort.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have the same kind of political organizing as there is here in Santa Cruz. SCAN has significant power, and that should not be denied in this town. And when SCAN decides to get behind an issue, it's because, and this is in my opinion, by the way, I'm going to be at that protest today, or
the
rally.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be bringing some very attractive 4th annual Santa Cruz Industrial Hemp Expo postcards with me.
I could possibly bring some large joints. No, just kidding.
And in fact,
we want to mix our issues.
If I might get a plug in here, the 4th Santa Cruz Industrial Hemp Expo is May 12th and 13th at the Civic, and we're going to have a keynote address by California Assembly Member Virginia Strom Martin from Mendocino County, mm-hmm. of Northern California, who is sponsoring a hemp bill in the California Assembly. She will be speaking at the Civic Saturday morning, 11:30. So that's what's in the wind for me right now is the 4th Hemp Expo, which looks to be a very, very promising.
And when is that Hemp Expo coming up?
It's May 12th and 13th at the Civic. In fact, for the first year this year, we will be utilizing the City Council Chambers for our panel series. We have 5 panels on industrial hemp over the 2-day weekend, and they'll be broadcast live on community TV.
Excellent.
This show, really, this 4th show, we're hitting a high note. A sitting politician giving a speech at a hemp expo is a major situation.
You're talking about Fitzmaurice?
No, I'm talking about California Assembly Member Virginia Strom.
Gotcha. So have any local political hacks agreed to
they,
be?
They were, in fact, when Celia Scott was mayor at the first show, she spoke. In fact, I felt that she would.
Mm-hmm. Well, Celia Scott was an unusual case.
Dr. Sugar spoke at the second show.
Mayor Sugar?
Yeah, you bet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and
former Mayor Sugar.
There is, I think we do a good event. It's a clean event. We draw people literally from all over the world to Santa Cruz for this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We will be having at least 2 vendors from China this year.
Mm-hmm.
Considerable Asian interest.
Hopefully not a lot of slave labor product from China.
Well, that's the rub. Here's the thing. The Chinese never have stopped producing hemp, and they have retooled, and they have much lower labor rates. So we're getting interest in this year's expo, not just from China, but from Pakistan and from Bangladesh.
What's the state law regarding hemp use here in California?
You can't grow it. You can import hemp, processed hemp. Mm-hmm. And what might be one of the big issues right now is this whole zero THC threat by the Drug Enforcement Agency. So that, for example, hemp foods that are made out of hemp oil have to be documented to be processed from zero THC cannabis, which is going to wipe out a great deal of the hemp industry.
Now, has this actually passed, or is this a recommendation?
No, it's a threat. It's like it's been entered into the congressional, there's a process you go through.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can view it on the web if you go to the HIA's website, which is the HIA.org.
HIA is?
The Hemp Industry Association.
Uh-huh.
HempEmbargo.com has this proposal online. So there is an effort to dislodge it, but
it's the kind
of harassment hysteria that has held hemp back for 70 years.
Well, I remember, as I recall, this is an attempt by the huge drug testing industry, whose drug testing stuff is all going to be, shall we say, ruined if they have if low amounts of THC are allowed in hemp products like protein food and any kind of foods, because then you could say, well, I'm not smoking, I'm not engaging in the dreaded marijuana puffing, I'm actually just eating some legal food here.
Well,
and it would ruin their drug test. I mean, you don't want to ruin their drug test, do you, Bob?
It's what the claim is, and I wish I had the language right in front of me, but the DEA is saying that they have the responsibility to protect the American citizenry from illegal intake of these controlled substances.
Uh-huh.
Now, the fact is that THC, when it's reduced down to such a minuscule level as is in hemp salad oil, for example, is ridiculously low.
Mm-hmm.
And insane to make that kind of a clampdown. In my opinion, there is some controversy in this issue, and it'll come up during the expo. It's probably the hottest issue politically going is this threat of a zero THC tolerance.
Well, then there's that old boring issue of 760,000 people jailed last year for marijuana use that nobody talks about much, but
there
still
is
goes
one
on.
Governor. It's very interesting. You know, out of the darkness, Governor Gary Johnson of New Mexico has stood, and he's an in-office politician. What's so exciting about Strom Martin is that she's an in-office politician. It's not like she's out of office speaking out about industrial hemp. She's in office.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, too, is that it has been women that have moved this issue along. Cynthia Thalen in Hawaii is accountable for the only legal hemp in the United States of America, which is a quarter-acre test plot at the University of Hawaii. Most people don't even know that North Dakota legalized industrial hemp in 1999.
I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now the DEA overrides all this stuff. But at least on paper, there's one state with... we have legalized industrial hemp and procedures on how to grow it. Another interesting thing I'll throw in there is that the Oglala Sioux tribe late last year, attempted to grow hemp on their what they felt was their sovereign territory. The DEA raided them and took their crop.
Okay. You know, Bob,
this is a very fascinating issue.
It is. And apropos of this, I would like to propose to you officially. You used to have a show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and perhaps too much of it was taken up for my taste with repetitive tirades against Danner. And I don't like Danner either, and I'm always glad when you put out that information.
Well, that was the time, Robert.
Right, no, I understand.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Right,
too.
But before we do, I want to say this. I really find your information on hemp very interesting. And I would invite you to prepare a 15 or 20 minute segment every week for my show, which updates the community on what's happening with hemp. And you would be welcome. People could tune in at that time. They could learn what's going on. You could either do it live or you could tape it. And you're just invited to do it, as far as I'm concerned. You can use my show to do it. So I just wanted to invite you to do that.
Well, thank you. What's said about Strom Martin's bill is that where you could suppress North Dakota, California passes a hemp bill, and it ain't going to be so easily suppressed. Now, a lot of states have come online with a we'll look into it bill. Right, they pass it to their university and examine it and all that. But the two big deals in the United States of America are the one-quarter-acre plot at the University of Hawaii, which was organized by Cynthia Thalen, and what's coming up now in California by Virginia Strom Martin, who is going to be our keynote here. But hemp is a very fascinating issue. It shows that government can and does lie.
No.
And no matter what you think about getting loaded, it has nothing really, in all honesty, to do with industrial hemp, which has been used since before writing. As far back as civilization goes, we see hemp along with human beings.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first fabric. It was used for clothing. It was used for rope. It was used for all kinds of things, for eating. And to have this attempt to obliterate it from history is fascinating. It reminds me of the Kennedy assassination. I don't want to sound paranoid or delirious or hysterical, but the Kennedy assassination has not been dealt with honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I ask you about these two women who you're celebrating, Phelan and Strom Martin. Have they also come out in favor of decriminalizing marijuana for recreational use, amnesty, and restitution for those in jail? Have they come out for anything like that? I want to ask.
I have to really say I don't know.
Right.
But I have to also applaud and laud mm-hmm. the courage and the principle involved with taking a front burner step on a hot potato issue.
Well, I'll
now,
tell you,
a lot of folks support industrial hemp in the background, but they're waiting for this bandwagon.
Right.
The bottom line, Robert,
scan, no doubt,
is that bandwagons happen because leadership happens.
Right. Well, but let me point out to you that it's very depressing to see all these splits. You know, we have these groups that say, oh, let's have industrial hemp. Then we have the groups that say, well, let's have medical marijuana. Then we have the groups that say, well, let's have recreational marijuana but keep criminal all these other drugs.
The fact of the matter is
the major expense in this country, the major thing that's causing the jails to be filled federally is drug prohibition, and we know that. And it seems to me that it's time all of us hempsters, medical marijuanisters, whatever we are, got together behind immediate decriminalization of all this stuff and stop trying to, you know, oh, you know, favor us. We're only in favor of hemp. We're only in favor of medical marijuana. Just you can do that little bit. I find myself becoming skeptical that this kind of separation puts us in a position where we kind of get, you know, they turn us against each other. We aren't united. What do you think?
You're not alone in that. It's probably the single greatest controversy within the so-called hemp movement is exactly that. Do you deny the pot connection? And I think the interesting thing is that you do and you don't. For example, with the show here in Santa Cruz, what it's come to be is that we will, in the official context, keep it industrial hemp very strictly. There will be no glass, for example, at the show. No paraphernalia, none of that stuff. All right. All industrial hemp products in their
what kind of smoke outside? Is that what you're
saying? Various dimensions. Mm-hmm. But when you come to Santa Cruz, there's freedom of speech. Chris Conrad is our MC this year. In fact, Chris Conrad is responsible, at least in the chain of events that led to the Hemp Expo. It was a call. In fact, Alan Brady tipped me off about you want to do something for the issue?
Mm-hmm.
Do a hemp show at the Civic. Call Chris Conrad, and I knew Conrad from the early medical marijuana days in the early 90s. And I called Conrad. And he said, call the HIA. I called the HIA, got their membership list, and called the members that were around the Santa Cruz area, and out of that was born the Santa Cruz Industrial Hemp Expo. Theodore Carey also deserves a very long accolade for being a part of this and is part of it still. But at any rate, it's one of those issues that pushes and pulls hemp along. There are those purists that feel very strong about the only way that you're going to get activity is by keeping the issue clean and separate. But there are those that say that, for example, most of the hemp movement in our time, which was born out of Jack Harris's book, by the way, which was monumental.
The Emperor Wears No Clothes.
Monumental. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, the classic video, Hemp for Victory, which was Jack Harris was turned on to by some Coptic Christians doing research at the Library of Congress.
I believe it's in the library, too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, he knew what it was. Jack mm-hmm. Harris knew what it was, and the folks at the Library of Congress denied that it existed. This is how significant and how powerful government can be when they want to suppress and obliterate.
Oh, sure. I mean, we saw that done with Wilhelm Reich's stuff and his writings when they burned his writings and jailed him in the 50s. The psychotherapist who's concerned with armoring and the orgone box and that kind of stuff. But, you know, again, getting back to this divisions we have, I mean, we have a local escalating drug war. We have an escalating police department budget. We have a situation where the major medical marijuana club in town, Kate Wells' Cannabis Pharmaceuticals, is dead because a progressive city council, which will stand up, no doubt, and bow at your hemp exhibit if they're invited to go in there, has essentially crushed the local medical marijuana movement by refusing to declare a medical marijuana emergency.
Well, now, this is also a hot yeah. issue because medical marijuana is up before the United States Supreme Court. And sometime around June, they're going to decide on whether the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Club, which was the test case, is legal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 215 has been kind of this gray area states' rights thing where it hasn't been challenged really totally yet. And on a local basis, including in Santa Cruz, you have, I think, some very, very enlightened law enforcement officials in regard to medical marijuana, in my opinion.
Again,
in California.
You're splitting the issue. We have a problem of about the entire drug war, and they're in no way enlightened on that issue.
I think it's an enormous issue. It has to do with drug hysteria in general and the propensity of the American citizenry to feel comfortable with throwing billions of dollars at this compound.
Well, I think it has to do with the people of Santa Cruz not having the intestinal fortitude and initiative to stand up and march down to the jail and say, let those people out. I think that if it starts happening at a local level, that the state can do nothing about it. And if it starts happening here, it'll start happening in other jurisdictions.
I don't think we can
talk about let's wait for the Supreme Court, or let's wait for the discussions in the Green Party, or let's wait for the HIA to do something. I mean,
HIA is pretty clean, by the way. They stay away from
marijuana. You know, let's not get involved with these heretics. Let's not get involved with any of these people who are criminals thrown in jail for the dreaded crime of smoking marijuana. I mean, you know this is wrong, and I know this is wrong. And the question is, how do we take a local stand that means something instead of this endless waiting, which we see through the 70s, through the 80s, through the 90s, leads nowhere.
I think that these are difficult calls. One has to accept the place that one is in historical context and the errancy of the political process, whatever the proper phrase is, the hypocrisy, the imperfection. But, you know, Chris Conrad, who is the MC this year, is a total legalization. Jack Hare was RMC in 1999, total legalization.
Let him light up a joint on stage. Let him put his butt where his mouth is.
What folks have learned is that when you separate the issue, when you talk about industrial hemp, it gets down to irrefutability. It gets down to solely economic considerations. Mm-hmm. The only reason why industrial hemp was made illegal, and by the way, those issues were fused together, in my opinion, in the 1930s, the recreational drug and the industrial hemp issue, by reefer madness and other propaganda tactics to make hemp illegal in the 30s, when it was shown to be competitive with timber for paper and petrochemicals for other uses, right? So I think there was a profound economic shift in the 30s that produced where we're at with all of this stuff. And I don't know what to say, Robert. You do what you can. You speak out when you can. You applaud those that do speak out. Governor Gary Johnson of New Mexico deserves to be applauded.
Right.
But what can you do beyond that?
Well, I've already proposed at least five things you can do beyond that. You know, you can light up a joint on the corner of your choice and have 15 people with you.
You know, there are civil disobedience circumstances that do that, where those occur.
Not recently, and not in Santa Cruz. I guess they have your occasional yearly, you know, sort of festival on campus, the 420 festival, but it doesn't, you know, it's mostly people who are pulling in their wings, pulling in their heads, doing the ostrich thing, and we have the video cameras downtown watching people selling and buying small quantities of marijuana, criminalizing young people. The machine is operating faster than the decriminalization people.
I think we have to call into question our leadership. And why is it that we vote the way we vote?
Well, you vote with your heart, and you talk about this regularly, Robert. You vote with what you do, Bob. Not just you don't vote every November. You vote every day. You know that. And so I gotta kind of move along. But let me just first of all give you an opportunity to give a phone number where people can call first around hemp and second around rent control.
Anybody that wants to call about the hemp expo, 425-3003 is our publicity voicemail. CruzExpo.com on the web, CruzExpo.com. You'll see, by the time the show happens, all the vendors will be posted. We'll have somewhere 70 to 80 vendors. This is a major affair. We have here in Santa Cruz the biggest industrial hemp event that we know of.
How much is it?
Certainly in North America. To get in, it's $6 a day, $10 for both days. Mm-hmm. Shows up in 10 to 6. May 12th and 13th.
You have low-income kind of entrance possibilities or not?
CruzExpo.com, CruzExpo. That's pretty low for what this is.
I mean, talk about
this show has never been other than a floated loss, and there's no reason why it shouldn't have at least the opportunity to break even and mature and pay some of the people that have kept this thing going. Mm-hmm. There's a whole body of people here in Santa Cruz that have done this out of political will, Robert, and they're feeling that the issue is important on environmental grounds. That needs to come up. That hasn't come up in our conversation yet. How important hemp is environmentally.
We are going to talk about that, but remember, you have 20 minutes every show to talk about it. I'm going to have to roll because we kind of rolled through our 20 minutes here.
So, cruiseexpo.com, and the Hemp Expo is coming up, our fourth Santa Cruz Industrial Hemp Expo, and I'll see those that show up at the Rent Rage Rally.
Any comments on, if people want to get to the, are you a scheduled speaker, by the way, at the Rent Rally, the
no,
Rent Rage?
No,
I would think you should be. You've been working on this issue for several years. You have a wealth of information, and that's one of the things that makes me a little wary about this whole thing. It looks like a tiny, incestuous scan deal that got together with the 204 Riverside tenants to get it, you know, to get this rolling, and it worries me, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to be there.
Are you a SCAM member, Robert?
I am a SCAM member, yes.
Well, there you go.
Unfortunately. Well, I mean, I'm a SCAM member.
My protest against that style
of politics. I'm a SCAM member who's been barred from the SCAM offices,
there
and
you
whose committee has been dissolved, and whose forum was disaffiliated, so I must say that I'm a banned by SCAM member, if you will.
Oh, how about 30 more seconds? I want to just get into
sure.
it. You know, Nick Whitehead and I presented the Danner case in April of 95 to the SCAN Steering Committee.
That's Judge Art Danner,
okay.
Then DA Art Danner.
All right. I'm not a SCAN member because I don't like that kind of politics. It's disingenuous going out the gate. It's about winning. It's about power.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about principle.
I'm afraid that that's largely true. Let me say that you also were going to, can you have any updates on San Jose? I know you were offering to take people over there to the various meetings at the rent control.
I went to a meeting, and you know, the Hemp Expo is taking priority for me. It just has to. I mean, the next 5 weeks, it's about the Hemp Expo. But I went to a meeting a couple Fridays ago in Sunnyvale. There's organizing that's going on over there that should be tied in my opinion, with things that are going on here. If you want to call the folks over the hill, there's a tenants association at 408-819-2582.
Give that to us one more time.
408-819-2582. And they're pushing for just cause eviction ordinances, and they're pushing for rent control. They're pushing for elevating this issue to the point where it's discussed in rational and not emotional terms. One, you know, rent control, the thing about rent control is that tenants are difficult to organize, and all the money is with the property owners. And after a while, the so-called left becomes establishment, and they become funded by property owners. Not that that's bad, but if you want to look at why the left doesn't get behind these issues so easily, because the left becomes the establishment. Not that that's even bad, but I think as a way to understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you've helped us with this understanding, Bob. And thank you for calling, and please call in again either on Thursday from 6 to 8 when we return, or on Sunday next week, or if we say something that you think needs further comment, just call in again.
Robert, thank you very much.
All right.
All right, you bet.
Bye-bye.
Does it compare with all the tales they tell? What is real and what are dreams in that world where nothing is what it seems? Who can advise me?
How can I use the lessons learned that outside the wall? Can I walk through fire and not be burned on the way? How can I make that world my own and fight the fear when I'm alone? Instruct me. You, the two who gave me breath, fashioned me. You who clothed me with your flesh and bone. You who fed and sheltered me. Open the door and set me free. Now you can help me.
I want to break away. When you're born, your mother thinks, oh, he's going to be a great lad. You're cast, you're moulded, and that's where you're going to be, but if you break away, you're regarded as strange and as a beatnik or something.
You shouldn't go out with boys, you're too young.
You're not going, I am going. You're not. I am going.
You're not old enough, you don't do this. Where have you been? What have you been doing? Where you with?
I think you're born to die. You know, you just eat, sleep, drink and die. And that's it. That is their happy life.
The tale of the children of the troubled world. The tale of the search and the long journey. Each one awaits the word of comfort, the simple gesture of recognition from those who once made the same journey.
I find it very difficult to talk to my parents.
I have no trouble with my dad because he's on nights. He's been on nights for 6 years.
Of course, I respect my parents, but I don't think they realise I'm growing up at all.
I never discuss anything at home.
And that's Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger on the Edge. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Call-in number is 427-3772. As you can hear, we deal with a wide variety of topics ranging from decriminalization of drugs to rent to, of course, our old favorite laws that criminalize the homeless in Santa Cruz and across the country, the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. City Council has a meeting coming up on Tuesday. As usual, their meetings are at 3 and at 7, plus a closed meeting. I think it's either 1 or 1:30. The closed meeting, you have an opportunity to speak before the closed meeting, thanks to the intrepid intervention of myself and others who insisted on this requirement, since state law requires it, and the city was apparently violating state law or not advising citizens of their right to attend these meetings and have an open presentation before the meetings happen. Closed sessions are important in the Santa Cruz City Council because a lot of substantive discussion goes on there, illegally in my view, about issues before they get out into the public. They shouldn't be that kind of substantive discussion. The Brown Act prohibits more than three council members from meeting to talk publicly without noticing it, putting it on the agenda, and letting the rest of us in on what's going on so we can sit in, listen in, maybe even have some input into the decision-making process. Ha-ha. Doesn't happen usually in Santa Cruz, but it could happen if the law were followed and if we insisted on there being a real democratic process here. Anyway, at closed session, again coming up for discussion at the closed session of the Tuesday, April 10th City Council meeting, is the acquisition of the Lee property in the Beach Flats. Now, you know they're having a Rage Against Rent rally down there, and we've heard a lot, properly so, about the vicious rent raises around 204 Riverside by slumlord Victor Rodriguez. What we haven't heard, of course, is that Rodriguez's 204 Riverside property could have been purchased by the City Council considerably cheaper way back 2 years ago had not Catherine Byers, Tim Fitzmaurice, Keith Sugar, and Christopher Crone and all the rest of the council in those days insisted on going along with the Mercy Charities Housing Monopoly Sole Source Provider's dusty old 8-year-old plan for a Dolphin Lee project. That plan is, of course, to destroy the Dolphin and Lee apartments and also tear down other apartments. That's already been done, the Rex Court across the street, and eventually build less housing there than currently was serving people before. Better housing for a smaller number of people, actually, and a subsidized housing project where the rents will remain low in perpetuity, or at least for 30 years until such time as Mercy actually owns the project, who knows, may own it even sooner based on the way they've been dealing with the dolphin. The city council actually just gave them the money. It was a low-interest loan, but it was in essence a gift. So instead of having the city spend $12.5 million, 5 years of redevelopment money, in acquiring land to build on, where you could have, or requiring the builders who are building housing to put in affordable housing and not buy out of it, as they can currently do, City Council has essentially just handed over the treasury to Mercy Charities Housing, which is what they do have done routinely in every vote that I've observed for the last 2.5 years when I've been made aware of this issue, thanks largely to Scott Graham and to Phil Baer. Phil's a landlord and an activist in the Beach Flats. Scott is just a barefoot troublemaker and an auto mechanic, not to mention a man of many other trades who occasionally, perhaps today will be a case, calls into this show and gives us some of his thoughts on the issues. He's a really a regular city council meeting attender. He must be a real glutton for punishment. I show up there less frequently. I didn't show up, for example, last Tuesday at the capital improvements meeting, and I still don't quite know what was going on there. If anybody out there knows, was at the special city council meeting last Tuesday to talk about what kinds of capital improvements, or that's a nice way of putting it, improvements for who, of course, more offices, more police department facilities, let's spend $1.5 million to whip the Pogonip Lodge into shape. Let's help out those poor folks with their the golfers up there in that area. The capital improvements that really should be done that are relatively cost-effective, like a real low-income campground for poor people who are currently running from the city's 11 to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban, they don't get even on the agenda, even discussed, except by gadflies like myself who come in and raise the issue and then, of course, get shut down. But you can raise the issue here, and here's apparently a caller who might be raising that issue.
Hey there, caller. You're on free radio.
Hi. It's and I've listened to you, and I wanted to come in on the couple of the issues that you've raised.
Well, before you do, Ed, let me just point out what we talked about earlier, because I did ask you to call in, and I appreciate it. You're a man who's had planning department experience and redevelopment experience in different ways. I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. But there's an item on the agenda which has to do with adopting a resolution which, I guess, it deals with the acquisition of a property for yet another Mercy housing project over at, on Galt Street?
Yeah, 211 Galt.
And this is for a senior housing project, and I think you and I both agree senior housing is a great thing, but it involves acquisition of an acre, I guess two half-acre lots, and some zoning changes, which most of us would regard as very technical, and who knows what this is all about. But it is coming up on the agenda, and I think you had some concerns about it, right?
Well, the property itself, if it's a vacant parcel that's up against the auto dealership fronting on Soquel.
And also between Soquel and Galt Street, right?
Right.
Sort of right near the library, the Brants 40 Library.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The property has been proposed a number of times for various condo projects.
Mm-hmm.
I, of course, have been very critical of using all of our land zone for multiple family, where you can build apartments, to putting in condos, which are essentially ownership units, which did not help the housing market in its cry for more rental housing constructed by the private sector. The use of all of these RL and RM zoned properties for ownership units has not only raised the cost of the land, but it has raised the cost of the median incomes. We have now essentially seen the median income of the county of Santa Cruz residents going up at a higher rate than any other rate.
Now, does this mean that we're just a prosperous county doing a fine job, or does it mean that a bunch of colonialist rich people are moving in and pushing the rest of us out?
That's exactly what's happening, and the median incomes of all of the residents of the newly constructed units in the last 20 years has been pushing up. What's interesting, the range of incomes that qualify people as median income people capable of living in subsidized housing. There's a whole other factor. When we have a median income now somewhere over $60,000 a year for a family of four, and median income is defined as 120% of the median to be eligible, and still called median income.
And the median is what, $60,000 or something?
It's over 60 now.
Uh-huh. So that's what's considered the middle income.
Right. And you,
how many of you people out there in free radio land make $60,000 a year? Raise your hands or call in immediately, and you can make a nice donation to us. Go ahead, Ed.
So if you're 120% of the median income, which is a fifth more, which is $72,000 closer to $75,000, these are middle income people who will qualify for these subsidized, Section 8 and all kinds of projects.
So does that mean poorer people would not qualify for them? Well, it means that they would, but that you would get people who can pay more, and so presumably would be more desirable as tenants, and so the poorer people just won't get them? Is that the point?
Well, that would be true if they were building rental, but they're building ownership units, condos, if you will, and they are requiring 15% of those units be affordable to low and moderate.
Difficult.
Well, the problem is that if you're making $75,000 a year, you qualify as one of those people who can buy those set aside.
So the set-asides aren't really set-asides for low income. They're set-asides for people who have 15% more than the median income, which is not low income at all.
And not only that, but they're, of course, more credit-worthy for the banks to help, to finance them.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly they're going to be more qualified.
Now, this project that we're talking about that's coming up for a vote on Tuesday is a Mercy Charities housing project where they are already designated as the sole source provider, even though the Planning Commission, which met on this issue last week, said that there should be a competitive bidding process. Why isn't the Planning Commission's recommendation being put forward instead of, why is the redevelopment agency or the staff of this so hot on Mercy Housing? Any ideas?
No, I can't give you a specific that I know of. I just think that the concept is wrong. But I will tell you that there is a slightly different problem in this project,
mm-hmm.
that I think needs to be explored.
Go ahead.
As I started to say earlier, mm-hmm. that the and you also raised the point that what's happening is that there are ownership units being built on our multifamily zoned land, and that they are being purchased by those who are coming from over the hill and moving into this county, which means that that this land is not meeting the needs of the people who are already in this county.
Mm-hmm.
That's the in-migration of upper-income people buying up the housing that's being built. And the developers and the realtors are perfectly content to have expensive housing built because they're looking at their profits initially, and they're looking at resales in the future.
And City Council and SCAN as well, do you think?
I think that that's part of it. That's the reason that the realtors have not, the real estate industry has not been on SCAN's case for neglecting the rental side of the housing equation.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in the same time, this is a senior project. This is a project for seniors only.
Now, it's for seniors to buy their own condos?
No, this would be for, I assume, for rental.
So this actually isn't for condos we're talking about coming up on Tuesday. It is for a rental project which Mercy Housing would operate.
Right, but mm-hmm. it's for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to wonder... since we've built several senior housing projects, which are fine, I have no problem with building senior housing projects, especially for the low-income seniors.
Mm-hmm.
But these low-income seniors are also coming from out of the county, and these retirees are coming to Santa Cruz to retire. And here again, what little land we have available for rental. rental housing for the working low and moderate income employee in Santa Cruz. We have no housing being provided for them. Instead, we're providing senior housing for retirees from somewhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unwise use of what little multifamily zoned land we have left in the city.
The Planning Commission comment on this, I know you heard me read you the staff report earlier this morning, and I don't have it handy with me, unfortunately, at the moment here, but do you recall if the Planning Commission, which did say it didn't think Mercy Charities should simply be handed the contract, that it should there should be a competitive process, and then this was not forwarded in the recommendation, at least as part of the recommendation, it looked like, to the City Council. It also, I guess, was there also a provision regarding that this would proceed to allow folks from all over the state or wherever to be able to have access to this housing, or that they would be restricted to local folks? I didn't remember anything about that.
Oh, I'm sure that they have no way of restricting it to locals.
So that's sort of in order
to qualify for the various funding programs that the state.
So that's something we wouldn't know about, except that you're bringing it up right now.
Right, but it's an interesting point too, and that is the sale of existing housing has shot up so much. A $20,000 house in 1970. Is now $500,000. So those who owned their houses, let's say at the time that Proposition 13 was passed in 1978,
are in good shape.
They're in wonderful shape. Now mm-hmm. The problem is that when they sell their houses, they have so much money they can't qualify as low income, right?
Right.
And one of the ideas of the senior housing was to free up those older homes with retirees and people who are no longer able to remain elderly, usually widows, who can no longer maintain a house by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to build senior housing for them and free up that unit to the market for a young family to move in, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Except that we don't have the young families here who can afford a $500,000 house anymore.
We just got to get a better class of people there, Ed.
So, and those seniors are not moving into these little subsidized rental senior housing projects.
Now, this rental housing project that we're talking about for Tuesday on Galt Street, that's coming up, actually, I think it's on the afternoon City Council agenda at 3 o'clock, what recommendations would you propose to folks out there to contact City Council to ask them to make changes or make? I mean, what's your reaction to this proposal? Should it be passed as it's been presented? Should it be returned to the Planning Commission? Should it be amended at the City Council level? What do you suggest?
Well, I remember back in the time when La Posada, a senior housing project, was proposed on Frederick Street. There was some local opposition, but I supported it at the time because I felt that it was a good location for a large senior housing project that housed people near a library, near a hospital. At the time, there was a hospital there, and walked to services. You could walk to the Safeway, etc. So I thought that this was as good a location for a senior project as you could find.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question is whether the Galt Street location is equally ideal for seniors. I suppose it's not a bad location for the same reasons, except that the hospital's no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, the issue to me relates not so much to do we have a demand in Santa Cruz for senior housing? That's the first question. Is the demand equal or similar to demand for rental housing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's no question in my mind that there isn't a demand, except for if you're taking people who are currently living and working in Santa Cruz. That's the basis.
So are you saying then that there's more of a demand for general rental housing than there is for senior housing for those who live and work in Santa Cruz?
Right.
And so are you suggesting perhaps that this project might be better designated for folks generally, or low-income folks generally, rather low-income working folks perhaps, than just seniors?
Right.
Also, I know that you noted that there was a problem with the fact that I guess part of this project involved rezoning it commercial from its residential status to deal with half of it's a parking lot, I guess, at the present time or something. Any comments on that?
Well, an auto dealership usually does not have enough parking for its cars that are kind of waiting or completed the auto repair shop.
Mm-hmm.
And several of the dealers here in town have essentially used the streets nearby to park their cars in storage, which creates a neighborhood parking problem. And it just so happens at this location there is no street parking on Soquel, and so that they have no opportunity to use the nearby streets to store their cars on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
So they need the parking lot as long as it remains an auto dealership. Of course, we don't know how long that's going to be, whether they're going to move to some other better location that serves their needs, and then freeze up that property to be built with just about anything.
Well, now, is it a good thing or a bad thing for them to rezone this commercial?
It's not only a bad thing to rezone this commercial, but the thing is they're initiating a general plan change because the general plan does not allow it to go to commercial. The commercial is limited to the frontage on Soquel.
And I think, again, this was something that the Planning Commission kind of objected to or had some concerns about, and yet I think it's the redevelopment agency or the staff is pushing this forward independently of the decision of the Planning Commission. Again, we find the city staff has its own agenda, seemingly looks like a more conservative agenda, although I don't know if we'd use the word as liberal or conservative here. I know you and I both discussed a change in the zoning of Canfield's parking lot right next to the Lee Apartments and the Beach Flats last fall from residential to commercial. And I thought, wow, here was a Canfield who has this big parking lot, which he shouldn't be using because it's zoned residential. Maybe he gets a special dispensation, but it certainly should be available for residential use. Used to be a bunch of residences there that he bulldozed. Or there were bulldozed there. Instead, there's this huge parking lot. And I'm going to kind of try to shift the focus back to that now because we do have this Rage Against Rent rally that's happening in the Beach Flats starting at 1 o'clock today, focusing largely on the 204 Riverside folks. But I'm interested in, you know, the housing project, the Dolphin Lee project that is slated to go in over the carcasses of the Dolphin and Lee Apartments and the Rex Court Apartments that could have, should we say, been put on vacant property. And we have the situation where Canfield seems to walk on in and get his property rezoned back to commercial from residential, which allows, I mean, it worries me. I'm wondering, are we subsidizing an amusement park here? Or are we looking for affordable housing? Do you catch my drift?
Well, I want to sum up the previous part reminding Planning Commission should have been reminded of this. We have a housing element, which is an integral part of our general plan. Any general plan amendments have to be found consistent with those policies, not just the land use policies, but the housing policies, circulation policies, etc. And the housing policy starts out by saying that the purpose of the housing is to meet the needs of the residents of Santa Cruz at all income levels. That is the intent of the housing element. And when we have a change in land use that does not respect that, and when we have housing that does not meet those needs of all income levels, we are in not consistent with the housing element. We're in conflict with the housing element policy that are our adopted policies.
But hasn't this been what the so-called progressive city council and its scan supporters have, by default, let them do time and time again?
Yes. That's not only have they done that, but all of these issues, even the even if we were to put the Dolphin and Lee onto the way I proposed it, which was to take the mostly vacant parking lot that is adjacent, and build the housing there first, then
instead of spending $12.5 million to send them all over the county and the state.
Right. Well, the relocation, to meet the legal needs of relocation, is going to be impossible in this housing market.
Not according to Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice.
Well, he may have some ideas of where these. But let's
maybe they can put him in his house.
Let's just take the singles,
mm-hmm.
because most of the units that are rental units that are out there in the market are currently occupied. If they're multifamily, I mean, if they're multi-bedroom units, these are going to be what should be family rentals. Turn out to be student rentals with as many students as can, you know, as the owner can put in there. So these units are not available to the families and for the singles to move into a multi-bedroom unit to put several singles.
Well, we're talking about we had thought between 300 and 400 people. Maybe there's less than that, 200 to 300 people in the Dolphin alone, although there are 156, according to Mercy Charities Housing's supposed count, considerably less, I believe, than were there before Mercy showed up, if they're counting all of them. And then you have, I don't know, 100, and not sure how many there are in the Lee, but at least 100 more. These are people that would all have to be relocated. And your proposal was to put them into a buildings that were built next door in on this parking lot, which the Seaside Company currently owns, but which was zoned residential until, by a quick slip of the fingers or flick of the wrist or, you know, sleight of hand, they got zipped into a commercial status. Any comments on that?
Well, that was one of the problems. Actually, it's interesting because the zoning for the beach area. The zoning plan that implements the beach area specific plan, that is the beach south of Laurel area plan that received so much attention,
mm-hmm.
when it came to actually drawing up the maps that zoned those policies, that meeting was held on a special meeting date at 11 in the morning.
Well, that was designed so that all those Latino workers could rush on down there from their jobs, right?
Right.
And it was held in Spanish and English, right?
Of course not. And the only opposition that came up was myself, and I had 3 minutes to counter, you know, hours worth of staff testimony.
But naturally, the city council leaped to pay attention to what you had to say.
Well, I did have some written material, which
mm-hmm.
they certainly didn't read. But anyway. The point was that it's interesting that because this is in response to the requirement that they have the specific plan and the zoning both have to be certified by the Coastal Commission, and state law requires that they have the fullest possible public airing of these issues. And I would say that there is no way that finding can be made that they have involved the public. Now, they did certainly have a full airing of the beach area plan. That was the famous three nights at the Civic Auditorium that the pro-Canfield minority on the council.
Actually, it was the majority at the time, but they became the minority after the election of 1998.
Well, the minority, the fourth vote was never that solid.
I mean, I thought they had everybody but Celia Scott and Catherine Byers back in 1998 before the election. And then Byers, through our successful, if misguided, support for the scam candidates, got Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, who ran on a platform of stopping the BSAL plan and having a real community-oriented process, which, of course, they abandoned immediately after they got into office.
Well, Campbell's vote and Matthew's vote. Campbell's vote was genuine. He listened to the issues and decided to go against the male minority, if you will. And the it was Cynthia Matthews who actually became the swing vote. And she... had, although she championed the housing project, which has now turned into the Dolphin Lee project. But she listened, and she realized that this, the project as proposed by Canfield, essentially, was not meeting the needs of the people.
You know, this is very interesting, but unfortunately, I don't think we can go into this at this time, but I would like to have you regularly on this show, Ed, because I think you have a depth of historical background as well as a wealth of understanding of the regulations involved, which most of us are really completely at sea at. And I'd like to have you talk about this rather subtle history of, you know, it's a couple of city councils ago, but I think it's still relevant for those of us who are trying to understand how we got to where we are now.
Well, that's how the zoning issue, you know, including the 204 Riverside, it's in a special zone, not just commercial zoning, but one that allows amusement park expansion.
Well, let's jump to 204 Riverside today and this rage against rent. Do you intend to be going down to that?
Yes, I do.
And what's your feeling about the plight of the 204 Riverside tenants? They have had rent raises of over 100% in the last year by slumlord Victor Rodriguez. And, you know, they're clamoring for some kind of relief. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I feel that, it's way too late to even think about having an effective rent control ordinance. I would like to see it adopted. I will support it as best I can. But, unfortunately, the state has taken away two of the issues that would be relevant for meaningful rent control.
What are those issues?
That is that that you cannot continue once it's vacated. The controls are no longer available. So the vacancy decontrol is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have so many of the rental units occupied by students who leave after the school year, the next occupants are. I mean, the owner's free of the rent control.
But is that's not the case in the 204 Riverside at the moment, is it?
No, that's true. Mm-hmm. But the point is that you can't roll back the rents. And so if it looks like the rent control is going to pass, up until the time that you actually adopt the implementing ordinances or pass it by vote, you're free to raise the rents as high as you want.
Provided there's a vacancy.
No. No. I mean, until the rent control ordinance is passed,
right,
there's
right.
no control.
I see. So they can raise the rent next month, and you think that that's what would happen citywide?
Sure. And also, it does not apply to detached single-family or even two- or three-unit projects.
But that could be a city ordinance. They could make it apply to those.
No, the state law prohibits cities from doing that.
I see. Okay. Well, that's good to hear that, have that clarified.
The number of units that would be available would be in the larger projects, and the 204 does qualify as a larger project. Those that have turnover of students, or anybody who leaves.
You're talking about rent control citywide,
right,
here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not just for the 204 Riverside people.
Right. So a lot of the existing rental stock would not qualify just because they're not in four or more units. And then, because a lot of the single-family stuff out in the neighborhoods, in the single-family neighborhoods, that's one of my strongest arguments for rent control, is because the residents of single-family neighborhoods are not happy with those houses that are held out for student rentals, which have multiple car parking on the sidewalks. They have no incentive to maintain their property, the lawns and the looks of it, and the noise comes from parties, etc. I mean, it just does not fit in with the traditional family neighborhood. And so we have the residents of the family neighborhoods who would just as soon see students out of their neighborhoods. So
you think that with rent control they would get their wish and lower income people would be able to move in?
No, I don't say that, but I mean those houses are going to get sold to owners the future. The problem is that we don't have the housing for both the students and the working middle and lower income households. We don't have rental housing to accommodate all of the needs out here. This is where our needs are.
So are you suggesting that the problem is not so much to be dealt with by addressing current rents on existing units, but simply building more units? Is that
we
your solution?
We need to build more rental housing. Mm-hmm. That's the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not need to build housing that does not meet the needs of the current residents. That's what we're building.
And that's an example of that would be the 211 Galt thing coming up?
Right. And also any expensive infill condo.
Mm-hmm.
These are being purchased by people who are not now in this county.
Well, let's jump back to 204 Riverside, because it sounds like you sort of have a grim forecast for them, because you're saying that state law prohibits, if a rent control law is proposed, then Rodriguez can suddenly hike up the rents, or at least they can stay as high as they are, and they can't be reduced. You could control them. Is part of the Costa, I guess it's the Costa-Hawkins Act statewide you're talking about.
Right.
Does that also prohibit rent reduction?
Well, I don't think any rent control ordinance has ever proposed that rents be reduced as part of that.
But could that be done legally?
I doubt it.
And what do you think would be the bar to that?
Well, I don't think that anybody would put that into the ordinance to be adopted by the voters. If the proposal was included, I'm just talking from a practical point of view. We have to get homeowners
to
vote for this thing.
Sure, but suppose you had an ordinance that said, a proposed ordinance, and you don't have to get voters. The city council could vote it in, you know.
No. It has to go to the ballot.
Is that another Costa-Hawkins thing? Or?
I think so.
So it has to go to the ballot. Huh, you're educating
the city council can put it on the ballot.
Right, but can't they simply pass it as an ordinance, a city ordinance? I think that, you know, they might be reluctant to pass it as a city ordinance, but I'm not aware that it's illegal or.
Well, I'm sure that for practical purposes that there would be an outcry to have it
right
on the ballot.
Right. So you're saying that
one
you're not.
Or the other. I don't think they would do it on their own.
Right. You're not sure that that's legally required.
Whichever, it doesn't matter because.
Well, I don't know. You and I may disagree about the politically possible.
You know how the council caved on the shelter. The
safe zones.
Safe zones.
Right, of course. But I'm interested in knowing what they can do legally, not just what they're likely to do politically. So I want to make sure I understand that. And as far as you know, it is not illegal for them to institute rent control on their own. You're not sure of that.
Right.
So if anybody out there has more information on this, please let us know. I'm going to be looking to get more info before the next show because I think this is a key issue. I've always thought it was quite possible for the city council, at least legally, to pass rent control. They might not feel politically able, but that's always a second issue. I mean, if you get enough protest, then people might start feeling politically able, and that's one of the things that the Rage Against Rent rally, hopefully, and other rallies coming up. That rally is happening today from 1 to 5 at the Beach Flats Park at Lee Brandt and Raymond Streets. Will be able to produce. We're talking to Ed Davidson. Ed, give us a little of your background. You've had some work with redevelopment agencies and planning commissions?
I have. I worked in redevelopment in New York City back in the late 60s when we had the exact same problem of inadequate relocation resources to move people out of the blighted neighborhoods in order to tear down their houses to build new ones. The lack of available relocation resources killed a lot of potential projects which would have done good, but you have to deal with the people who are now living there under these blighting conditions, and if you can't make their lives better, then you haven't solved any problems.
Let me ask you this, Ed. I've been repeatedly saying on this show that the city council could have bought the 204 Riverside apartments a couple years ago, probably at a much cheaper price than they paid for the Dolphin a year and a half later, and that the Dolphin rents and the Lee apartment rents hadn't gone up substantially in the last 4 or 5 years, although, you know, there were a lot of problems in the Dolphin, I understand, that were raised by tenants and that should have been addressed. but that in terms of rent hikes, it was the other apartments, the 204 Riverside, which some of us suggested they purchase immediately back in 1999 and land bank it if necessary, or run it the way that Mercy's running the Dolphin. But instead, they were fixated on this Catherine Byers plan of the Dolphin Lee, which Mercy Charities Housing has been pushing successfully as a sort of behind-the-scenes, all-powerful force. I mean, am I wrong about this? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, you're in a way you're right, and I wouldn't really argue with you. I'm looking at a more practical position, and that is we need to produce more housing.
Oh, I agree completely.
Now, this would be in the realm of protecting and upgrading existing housing, which mm-hmm. is a perfectly valid use of redevelopment money to upgrade, to maintain the quality of the housing that is meeting codes, et cetera.
So that could have been done to 204 Riverside.
It could have been done. And
can it still be done? Is that a solution we can use now, is have the city purchase 204 Riverside?
I suppose they could. I don't know if their money's all been tied up in the purchase of the Dolphin and Lee, which they should have been able to do because they don't have a relocation or replacement plan adopted.
And that was another concern you had about 211 Galt coming up for the senior project. You pointed out that Mercy Charities is again proceeding without a relocation or replacement housing plan to get zoning changes and favors from the council here.
But it's not an occupied property, so it's not an issue the way the Dolphin Lee is. The relocation and replacement has to do with occupied.
And that's the other question I wanted to ask you. You and I both drove by this 211 Galt property, and that we weren't sure whether it was currently there was a house on that site or whether it was a vacant piece of land. Did you ever figure out what that was?
I'm pretty sure it's the vacant property that's been up for.
I gotcha. Okay, so we're not going to be talking about displacing existing housing, which is good, which is happening at the Dolphin and Lee.
Right.
And did happen when they destroyed the Rex Court. My other concern about this whole 204 Riverside deal, and I'm going to have to run on you shortly because we got to go here, but is that the 204 Riverside property with these horrible rent hikes is being used as the boogeyman to scare the Dolphin and Lee tenants into jumping on board the Dolphin Lee project, which I think it's been pretty well documented will produce less housing than currently exists and serve less people and essentially disperse part of that community. Am I fair in this charge?
I'm not sure whether that the two are necessarily related.
Well,
I mean, the sudden
wringing of hands and the bringing in of the tenants to the 204 Riverside before the city council and the gestures of sending in inspectors and getting the landlord to lower his rents $100 when he should be lowering it $1,000 because they had these huge rent hikes. And then the claims that we hear that, you know, that Lee tenants now want to avoid having this horrible thing happening to them, it just seems awfully coincidental that, first of all, they didn't buy the Riverside when they should have, and now they're using the Riverside as a stick to beat the Lee tenants into jumping on board this Dolphin Lee project.
Well, the circumstances are different because the Dolphin has now been purchased.
Right.
And the Riverside, apparently, there isn't the money now to purchase it. And as I say, I don't think that using the Riverside as a stick against the to motivate the Dolphin Lee residents is particularly relevant. That was my reason that.
Well, I think it certainly seems relevant to the Dolphin and Lee tenants. I mean, they're saying, look, what's happened there, that could happen to us here. Let's jump on this project. And, you know, it seems to me this could be anticipated by...
Well, it's interesting because the fact that the Dolphin and Lee were purchased for the Dolphin, at least,
yeah,
was purchased, that put in the rent restrictions so that if it had been sold to a private owner who would raise the rents, like at the Riverside, that would be an argument that, well, at least for the time being, you're in your unit and we're going to do some repairs and we're going to, you know, fix it up and we're going to...
Hold down the rents.
And maintain the rents at the current levels. So when the city does take over a project, it has
good, at least for me, that's for my money. Ed, I want to thank you for being on the show. If folks have questions, I'd love to have them be able to call you. I don't want to put out your number on the air if you prefer not. Let me just say this. If you want to reach Ed Davidson, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll pass on that callers have questions, and then we'll pass those numbers on to you, Ed, and you can get back to those folks.
Okay, and if they want, I do have an email address.
What is that?
That's PlannerEJD at AOL.com.
EJD at AOL.com, and you, of course, will be down at the Rent Rage Rally, which kind of begins at 1, but I guess really officially begins at 2.
By the way, I just there's something on the consent agenda that you might be
quickly
aware of, and that is an existing senior housing project that was one of the Arnie Fishman.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to actually be talking about that next on the air. Go ahead.
And they're excusing a loan.
That's another Mercy Charities housing special, right?
Well, yeah, Mercy Charity has really taken over Arnie Fishman's spot in the affordable housing or subsidized housing.
Mm-hmm.
And these projects, of course, are being bled from the top of management fees and all these other fees so that ultimately they don't pencil out. And now they're...
Has there ever been an appropriation Mercy Charities has sought for or a loan forgiven that they haven't gotten from City Council you've ever heard of?
I'm not sure, but I know that two of their projects that they built, which are ongoing problems, which is El Centro on Pacific and the Playa on Lee Brandt and Riverside, both of those were built with residential above commercial, and the commercial hasn't panned out, or at least has been mismanaged in the case of El Centro. Remember that food court where you had a couple of budding, entrepreneurial restaurant businesses, food services.
That's right, right above Cat and Canary, and across from Logos.
The management threw them out, and they were figuring on they might have better luck if it was a single project. To bring in a McDonald's or some fast food chain. That was their intention.
Charming.
They threw out all these, young, budding entrepreneurs who were providing a service, and it was actually pretty popular.
I like that food court, yeah.
And that's been vacant now for years.
As has Cat and Canary.
And, of course, when they don't get the rent, then they all of a sudden they have financial problems. They come to the city for
forgiveness of loans.
Right.
Yeah. And Mercy Charities is running that too.
So there's your, just something else on the agenda. Just pops up.
Right. So come on down to the Tuesday City Council meeting. You'll probably see me and Ed hanging out there, conferring with each other or pretending not to notice each other or however it happens. And if you want to get in touch with Ed, give a call to 423-HUFF or try his email. If you forget any numbers that you hear on the air here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, again, the phone number to call is the easily remembered 423-HUFF, 423-4833, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We'll give you those numbers. Ed, thank you very much for being on the air. I hope you can make this a regular feature of your Sunday because people need to know what's coming up on these agendas, and you have, as I've said before, and this is no exaggeration or flattery, a wealth of knowledge on these issues that I really think it's helpful for you to share.
Well, I hope that I can reach the audience to help us try to solve some of these problems.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Parents were too busy watching the television.
My dad sits there, and I don't talk to him because we only rare.
There's my father. He's working himself to death just for me.
So I sit there all night long with nobody to talk to. This is the honest truth. And, I've got nothing except me mates. It's probably my fault as well, not just them. It's just the way things are.
And when I start discussing this with my parents, she just gets all hurt and won't discuss it with you at all. She says, I don't know what to make of you, you know.
Do you ever think that there's such a thing as a sort of a family life? Honestly, don't. I don't know, you get this jazz about mother and the father, and it's out of Enid Blyton, isn't it?
Where is the child who would climb on my knee, weaving her dreams with my own? Who is this woman who faces me now? Hostile, remote, alone.
Just happens, there's no point in blaming anybody.
Where is the one who was patient and kind, sharing my dreams and my plight? Who is this stranger that faces me now? Why does he turn away?
I think if they try to understand my point of view, I try to tell them that I've got to go through this. It's no good believing in one thing all your life. I think you've got to believe in different things to eventually reach something that you're going to understand and trust in.
Where is the trust? Respect that is owed. What of the plans and the schemes?
The dream, it was fine. It was yours though, not mine. Now let me find my own dreams.
You don't seem to realize what we want out of life is not what they think we should have. It's what we want. And you don't seem to be able to pass that over to the adult world in any form, you know.
The things that they want to do are entirely different to the things that I want to do. They're in a rut, aren't they? I mean, I want to do different things. My mum keeps saying, why can't you be like Hilda? She's steady, she got married, now she's got a baby. And because I'm not married yet and I'm not going steady with anybody, she thinks I'm being different, you know. This is all she can say all the time. Why do you have to be different?
I suppose it's understandable. You know, she don't know how to treat me, really. She don't know what to do, because it's never happened with her before.
She seems to take care of she's done the right thing in life, and I'm not doing the right thing. I'm being stupid, you know, just living in a big dream world all the time. Mama.
And that was our brief break with the Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger CD. From the early 60s, actually late 50s, a whole series which really reads, it's an interesting series, On the Edge, a radio ballad series of interviews and songs and ballads kind of weaved in together, and we'll be hearing more of that as we proceed, sort of as the, it's not much of a comic relief, but it's kind of a relief, perhaps, from the ongoing Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That's the show you're listening to here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Civil rights on the streets for the poor, and for those of us struggling to get affordable housing, I guess it's under what roofs we can. And that I've talked a bit about the Rage Against Rent rally coming up at 1 or at 2 if you're going to be late like I am, because I have this radio show that goes on till 1:30. In the Beach Flats at Raymond and Lee Brandt Streets at the Beach Flat Park. Hope it doesn't rain. That would be too bad, because I think folks have to rage a bit. I'm just concerned that we don't find ourselves raging in support of Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice and SCAN, who are not particularly helpful providers of affordable housing by their Mercy Charities housing giveaways and sellouts. I really have to use those words. SCAN did vote for the Dolphin Lee tenants not to have them dumped into the Mercy housing cooking pot till such time as they got real guarantees that they would have housing to come back to, but Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, when he was vice mayor and main pusher of this Mercy Charities Housing Dolphin Lee project, ignored that and proceeded right ahead. Now he's trying to get the Lee tenants on board and buy off Dolphin tenants, get them to head south or head out of town by a 5250 buyout, which means that they won't be able to have even the cheap housing that they did have, and they're going to have to go somewhere else with a check in their pocket. And I suppose this is it might be better for some folks, but I think it's the worst for our community and the worst considering the alternatives we had. We never got a chance to consider the alternatives because the open city council, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, took no action to ensure that when buyers laid down the law. And hopefully I'm going to I'm going to be pressing for, we need citywide rent control. I continue to think, although the considerations raised by Ed Davidson, who just spoke at some length in this interview we just had, are important. And that has been a consideration raised, in fact, by Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice the last time he spoke to me at any length before the City Council Coffee Clatch and Tag Team Teach-In back in early December. The mayor said to me that they don't even want to talk about rent control because the minute they do, the landlords will start raising the rents, and that'll be even worse for the tenants. And that, you know, the rent raises will take effect before the rent control can come into effect. But I'm thinking that there have to be ways for the city to discourage that kind of behavior by landlords, and also for tenant organizations to discourage that kind of behavior. I remember in the 30s, direct action by Communist Party groups, local Communist and Socialist Party groups. Activists got together when some people were kicked out of their buildings. The activists would just move the furniture right back into the building and stand in front of the building and essentially defend the tenants, kind of a self-defense. You might call that an anarchist solution. But where people are being thrown out on the streets with no place to go, and it becomes a real threat to their health and safety, something has to be done. And if politicians at the center won't do anything, the people on the streets have to do something. And that, of course, has been my line for a long time. People have to act on these issues since politicians won't. The Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board has a meeting tomorrow, Monday, at 5:30 at its City Council Chambers at 809 Center Street, across from the library, the place we usually go to see the city council meetings. There is a period of oral communications. If you have complaints against the police, it's a good place to make them, not because the CPRB will do diddly squat, but because it will go on the record and help other people filing complaints against the same police officers. Apropos of which, always make sure when you file a complaint that you check, I want this to be released to the media. They don't ever release anything to the media anyway. That's a deceptive phrase which the police department put on the form to discourage people from checking it. But if you don't check it,